Welcome to ITE 2, Module 2. Hope we all had a nice week. Okay, we'll start off today with our quiz from last week. So if you've all got your chat windows open and fingers at the ready, are we ready?
Ready, Mr. Okay. Music.
Oh, cool. Okay, question one. What are two reasons why a business may select Linux over Windows? A. Linux includes free application software. B. A business can run most distributions of Linux on an unlimited number of computers for no additional charge. C. Linux offers more application software. Or D. It is easy to buy a new computer with Linux pre-installed.
A B.
Got one, two answers.
That's better.
Three answers. Are you out there, folks?
There aren't actually that many people on. There's Leon, Aaron, and locals. Alice and Trevor, yeah.
Okay. All right, yes, it was A and B. All right. That was that Linux includes free application software, and a business can run most distributions of Linux on an unlimited number of computers, or no additional charge. Okay, question two. Which of the following are acronyms used to describe the two general categories of operating system interfaces? Is it A, DOS and Unix, B, DOS and GUI, C, Unix and GUI, or D, CLI and GUI?
D.
And I did hear the answer locally, yes, and I did hear it from, I'm not sure who that was, Elise, I think.
It was.
Yes, and you were correct. It was D, the CLI and the GUI. They're the interfaces, command line interface and the graphical user interface. Okay.
GUI.
GUI, how you feeling? GUI.
You'll turn anything into a song, aren't you?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Or hey,
I would just like to point out at this point that she sings to her dogs every morning before she feeds them.
I do too.
I got your food, and you don't have none.
Something like that. And how are you today, Aaron?
Oh, full of beans. I'm waiting to hear about a job application that I went for yesterday, so this is keeping me amused until they ring me.
Good luck. Keep us posted, won't you?
Quite possibly during the lecture, in fact.
Oh, excellent. Okay, question three. What is a function of a kernel? A, provides a friendly user interface for an administrator to manage the network operating system. B, it translates user input for the appropriate programs. C, it contains the FAT file system. Or D, it schedules and manages multiple processes.
D.
Come on, local students. Yep, I heard it. D is correct. It schedules and manages multiple processes. Question four. In the Unix community, what are the server programs called? Are they A, services, B, applications, C, web servers, or D, daemons?
D. A.
Elise. Yeah, no, it was D, daemons. Okay.
Well, I remember you saying last week daemons are things that you sort of go away and assign them to do something, and that's not what you said in the question.
Yes, she said which. Yeah, the question was things that ran in the background, and demons run in the background.
Mr. Background, sorry?
Yeah, the demons run in the background, and if you're running Apache in the foreground, then I'd be wondering why you'd be doing that. Apache is a demon, Telnet is a demon, the Telnet D is a demon. And they run in the background, and you do send them off, you assign them to do things, like you assign Apache to listen for web connections.
Gotcha. Thank you. Sorry.
Not a problem. Question five. What is the advantage of Linux? A. It is a true 16-bit operating system. B, it was developed by a single company. C, its code is open source. Or D, it's easier for most users to use than Windows.
C.
That's D if you're talking about Vista.
I was going to say, is there an argument for D? But I didn't want to get shot for saying the wrong answer.
Keep in mind this curriculum is about 2 or 3 years old, and Linux develops a lot in 2 or 3 years. 3 years ago I would have argued that it wasn't easier to use than Windows, although with machines like the Asus EPCs that have come out, Linux has become usable by the masses, although... People will still tend to smash the Linux off the Asus EPCs and put Windows on just because it's what they're used to, or, in the case of a lawyer friend of mine, because you can't easily get the format painter working under OpenOffice, which was a tool that she needed.
And she trashed a whole operating system for that?
Well, unfortunately, she uses the format painter on every single legal document she prepares, so that's probably a pretty good reason.
And the EPC's not quite up to running Wine.
No, but it ironically
Microsoft Office to run under it, you'd be doing all right.
Although that said, the EPCs do run very nicely with the Linux that they're distributed with, and in fact, they do run faster with the Linux they're distributed with than they do with Windows on the same hardware. It's just that some people find that they're just not familiar enough, and they don't want to learn something new. Which is ironic, because people will buy a Mac and learn how to use that, but they won't actually buy anything else and learn how to use that.
Okay, question 6. Which of the following statements about GNOME is true? It is generally regarded as standard Linux GUI, that's A. B, is compatible with all other window managers. C, is stable, proprietary and commercial Linux GUI. Or D, is a set of applications that run in the KDE desktop environment.
Are there any remote people left out there?
I'm not sure about it. It's either A or B.
The answer is generally regarded as standard Linux GUI. Okay.
GNOME doesn't run inside KDE though, Aaron.
I said B, not D.
You said B.
You said B. Okay.
Yep.
Question 7. What are two good reasons for searching Linux as an operating system? Searching? Using, even. A. Linux allows complete control of almost every aspect of security. B. More application software is available for Linux. C. Linux is regarded as virus-free in comparison to Windows. Or D, the Linux GUI eliminates the need for secondary text mode interface.
C, D.
Okay, the correct answer was Linux allows complete control of almost every aspect of security, that's A. And the other answer was C, Linux is regarded as virus-free in comparison to Windows. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, two. Statements best describe the security features of Windows. A. Compared to Linux, Windows is virus-free. B. By default, each user must provide a username and password to log on to a Windows system. C. Windows security features are generally regarded as either on or off. Or D. Most security features for Windows need to be purchased separately.
D. C and D.
Two.
CD. Oh, you want
two, yeah.
Everybody's getting those right.
No, just Windows and security in the same sentence. It just doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, it was C and D, which was Windows security features are generally regarded as either on or off, and D, most security features for Windows must be purchased separately. Question 9. Why is the FAT32 file system important? Because it is. A, it supports larger cluster sizes. B, it supports smaller cluster sizes. C, it supports ginormous cluster sizes. Kidding. C, it is twice as big as FAT16. Or D, it supports smaller disk sizes. Okay, there's a little bit of confusion in the classroom here. They're all thinking. Can you hear all the wheels turning? Okay. What's the question again, Trevor? The question was, why is the FAT 32 file system important? A, it supports larger cluster sizes. B, it supports smaller cluster sizes. C, it is twice as big as FAT 16. Or D, and the answer is B, it supports smaller cluster sizes. Question 10. What is a limitation of FAT? A, FAT was designed for use with drive partitions of up to 4 gigabytes. B, FAT was designed for use with Windows 3.1, Windows 95 and Windows 98. C, FAT is only used on floppy disks. Or D, FAT recognises file names that are up to 8 characters in length plus a 3-character extension.
D.
Ah, look at them all go. Good one. Yes, it was. It recognises file names up to 8 characters in length plus a 3-character extension. Guarantee you'll get something on that in your exam.
Okay. A is also correct, just out of morbid curiosity.
No, it's 2 gig, not 4.
Under Windows NT, it is 4 gig.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah, Windows NT...
Who cares? No one's used it for ages.
Yeah, Windows NT can... That's probably Aaron's phone, hopefully. He might have got that job.
No, it was mine and it just rang off.
Yeah, you can actually have 64K clusters under Windows NT. It's not common, but you can do 4 gig FAT partitions under Windows NT. It's not a very good idea, however, because Windows and DOS won't read and write them, but NT is quite happy with them.
And the last question in this lot. Okay, which of the following is a characteristic of preemptive multitasking? Is it A, applications give up unused processor time to other applications? B, when one program crashes, it might bring down the other programs? C, allocation of time slices is controlled by the operating system? Or D, a running application is allowed to complete before processor time is given to another program?
C.
Yes, it was C. Allocation of time slices is controlled by the operating system. Excellent, everybody. That's good. That's got all the cobwebs out. Okay. All right, so today we're going to talk more about networking. So we're talking more about local area networks, wide area networks, peer-to-peer and client server, all that type of thing. Okay, and also we'll be talking a lot about the OSI model. Anyone want to tell me what OSI stands for? Anyone not want to tell me what the OSI stands for?
Sorry, I just went out of the room to turn a radio down.
Oh,
a wireless
okay.
down. So I'm now back because I can now concentrate.
The old wireless, did you, dear?
Yes, I had to turn the wireless down, dear. It was making too much noise.
Turn off that damn radio, you damn fool woman. Isn't that what John Laws used to say?
That's right, he did too.
Yes, he did too.
Hello, world. This is John Laws. Well, this was John Laws.
Elise, I'm sure you can answer this question. What does OSI stand for, as refers to the OSI model?
Open Systems Interconnect.
Give the girl a cyber lollipop. Well done. Okay.
Thank
what
you.
Does it all mean, please, folks? Next week, I'll ask you again. Okay. So you've already, we've already started talking about that in IT1. We also have covered it in CCNA1. Okay, so again, we're going to be talking about things like the protocol suites, TCP, IP and such, and Ethernet, token ring, all that type of thing. Okay, all right, YTO and all that. Okay, so with computers, networks, we're sharing devices, we're sharing resources, and we can save money because we are sharing, not needing 15 printers and, we can all network to one. We're also using things like email. And with email, we're looking at a storage and retrieval type application. Works a bit like the post office. You get mail in, mail out. So you're getting actually things like on your email. Gosh, I've got Topaz snoring in the background.
Must be that sub she ate. It's worn out.
I don't know whether you can hear her out there in Cyberland, but she was snoring quite loudly then. And for those that don't know, Topaz got half of Kerry's Subway today.
And we needed to know that. That's good.
But it had chilies on it too, Elise.
So she will keep warm while she's asleep.
So she can stay asleep. Yeah, it's all too, yeah, you could be in for an exciting night at home.
Could be.
Actually, they don't seem to affect dogs the way they affect humans.
No, well, that's encouraging. Okay.
So my aunt used to feed curry to her dog all the time, and it didn't seem to bother it.
Yeah, the aunt or the dog?
No, the dog had upset the aunt.
Well, Topaz, as I said, is she's snoring away here, and she's got a big smile on her face. She feels better now, something like that. Okay, so your email is a storage and retrieval system.
Good morning, Enable.
Good morning, Enable. And it can be sent even if somebody isn't actually connected to the internet, so you can actually receive it at a later time as soon
Very
as you log
morning,
on. You will miss my good morning song. Okay, another thing we're going to be talking about is directory and name services. So another of the benefits of networks involves the ability for us to find resources or devices wherever they are located, and in order for us to enable those that are using the systems on the network to find the services that they need, the computer makes, or the network makes, use of directions and name services. And some of the advantages of the directory and name services are things like a standardised means of naming and locating your resources. And often too, when you think about text names, would be much easier for you to remember than if you had a lot of numbers. So the numbers are translated into a name. And also the network resources aren't actually bound to a particular physical location. So if we go back to the start where the internet, we're talking about a worldwide public network, and there's millions and millions of people interconnecting to one large big web, as we call the World Wide Web. And you've also got a lot of private networks connected as well. And they're using the services of internet service. Most of us are familiar with the term network administration, or what a network administrator does, and they are looking after the maintenance of networks, generally in big corporate environments, but you could call yourself a network one at home. And they support the people that are using the network as well. And that can, their responsibilities can be range from like setting up a new user account or a whole new network, or to monitoring the network and providing maintenance and repairing any failures. When we talk about numbers of networks, the first we discuss is the local area network. So when you've got a local area network, it's generally in a relatively small sort of area. It can be in your home, it can be in an office, or it can be over a couple of buildings, or for example, you know, a university campus. Or and in that network, you've got each computer is connected to each of the others by a separate communication channel. So you've got a direct connection from one computer to another, and we refer to that as a point-to-point link. And by allowing the computers to share that communications channel, the local area networks actually reduce costs of the network. And you can use point-to-point links to connect computers and networks in larger areas as well. But The general layout of your local area network we refer to as the word topology. Get used to that. You'll hear a lot of things written about the topology. So when we talk about the different topologies, and I know some of you will know this, say for example you've got all your computers connected to a central point or a hub, what type of network topology would we call that? I heard it here. That's good. When you wish upon a star,
you wonder all the pieces are. You didn't document it before you hooked it all together.
And the point-to-point thing is a bit misleading for people who aren't also doing CCNA, in that most LANs actually operate in a broadcast rather than a point-to-point environment.
Yes, a shared broadcast medium is how networks operate. And point-to-point links are often used over long distances to connect one site to another. So say the sales department is in Perth and the marketing department is in Bunbury, just to be tedious, you might actually connect the two with some sort of point-to-point link. Generally, you wouldn't do that these days. Unless you had lots of money, you'd probably use a virtual private network. But depending on your budget and your requirements, you may set up a point-to-point link between those two locations.
That's a very good point, though, Aaron. Well done. And thank you, Kerry. Okay, all right, I'm going to keep on topologies and see who knows what. Another topology that you might have connects the computers in a closed loop. So you'd have a cable that's run from one computer to the next, and then from the second to the next, until the last one is connected back to the first. Anyone tell me what type that might be? Ah, got it here. Ring, ring, why don't you give it a call? Yes, it's a ring topology. Well done, Trevor. Okay. All right. When you have a computer that attaches a computer, into a single long cable, anyone tell me what that might be?
Bus.
That's the one. Yeah, bus. Yeah. I haven't got a song for that.
The computer's on the bus, go up and down.
And down, round and round, straight in line. Okay, so that's good, folks. All right, so the bus topology is that one, that's right. So each of your topologies is going to have certain benefits and also drawbacks, and we're going to go into a little bit of those as we go along too. Okay. Sorry, scrolling down. Doesn't matter what type of topology you've got in your network, all of your local area networks are going to need the network computers to share a communications channel, which we refer to as the medium, and that connects them together. So if you've got a local area network, we have a set of rules for coordinating the use of the medium, and we refer to that as the media access control. And when you've got a number of computers on a network, one of them can only use the medium at a particular time. So you need to have rules for deciding how they're going to take turns to share the network. So the media access control rules enable each computer to take its own turn to use the medium. So you've got a...
And I was going to say, at what layer of the OSI reference model is the media access control a sublayer of?
Two.
Yeah, that's correct.
I assume this course material is pre the wide use of switches.
Well, it is shared between a number of curricula, and we are concentrating on getting an overview of networking into people's head. We're not concentrating on retaining, being absolutely 100% correct in Module 2.
Yep, point taken.
Okay, Now, I just want to talk a little bit about wide area networks as opposed to local area networks. Wide area networks are going to be talking, using, I should say, when you're communicating over long distances. So, for example, if you've got a local area network, the computers need to coordinate the use of the network, and that can be a little time-consuming. So when you've got a long distance, the computers would take longer to coordinate the use of the shared medium, and they'd spend less time, therefore, sending their data messages. Also, there'd be higher costs for providing high-speed media over long distances, and they're much greater than when you're using a local area network. So the technologies involved in wide area networks differ from local area networks. The lines that we refer to are called point-to-point because they connect only two devices, and you've got one on each side of the line. Refer to those as serial lines because the bits of information are transmitted one after another in a series. And when you've got computers connecting over wide area networks, they need to use devices called channel service data unit service, sorry, data service unit, or if we abbreviate that down, it's CSU, DSU, and uses that at each end of the connections. So that's where the connection point is, where the user's data coming from the computer or the network interfaces with the wide area connection. So in that case, the data that's being sent from the user, which would be in digital format, is then converted into a form that can be then transmitted on the wide area network, and that would be in analog format. And the CSU DSU, or the modem, converts that data into another form that can be sent over the wide area network. And then the same needs to be done on the destination wide area network link so that you can get the data converted into a form that your computer can translate. So that in that scenario, the device would then act similarly to a modem modulator, demodulator. And the transmitting end of the connection transforms the digital computer signals then into the analog signals, and on the receiving end, the reverse transformation gets done. You may need to listen to that on the recording a couple of times because there's a lot in there. Normally,
just be careful of that because not all wide area networks are analog. In fact, most of them are digital if they're higher than about 56K.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'd have to agree with that. In fact, DDS is digital data services, and they use digital signals over wide area networks because it's less prone to attenuation. But yeah, they do. They also did used to use a lot of analog on. Although ISDN is analog, isn't it, Aaron?
No, the D in ISDN is digital.
Yeah, that's right.
Attenuation, Kerry, you might want to explain that to people that don't know, too.
Oh, good.
That was a new term, I think, for a lot of people.
Ah, attenuation. Well, I thought a lot of these people had done CCNA1, although not all of them.
Yeah, not everybody, no.
Anyone here not done CCNA1? I know Leone hasn't. Anyway, and Trevor hasn't done CCNA1. Attenuation is the loss of signal strength due to distance, and it's where your signal gets fainter and fainter and fainter. As you get further and further away, and that can either happen due to electrical resistance, the power of the signal weakening, like radio waves and light waves and that sort of thing. So that is attenuation.
Thank you, Kerry. Yeah, I just thought that was a new term for a few people, so yeah. Okay, when you have some applications where you've got computers that you need to function as equal partners, we refer to that as a peer-to-peer network. You will get asked these different types of networks in your exam, so just be aware of that. So you have, when you're talking about peers, each computer can take on the client function or the server function. They're equals in that network. And each individual user would control their own resources in a peer-to-peer network. And their benefits, I guess, is they're relatively easy to install, easy to operate, and you don't need any additional equipment apart from, you know, your operating system that's on each computer. And you also don't need administrators. So if you've got, you might be asked a question like, where would you use, it wouldn't be in this way, it'd be sort of like benefits of peer-to-peer network and ABCD, but it would work well with a smaller number of computers and generally 10 or less. Okay, so, and I'm pretty sure there is a question on that in your final exam. Aren't we good to you? Okay, in a client-server network, you have a client and a server. Okay, so the network servers are located on the server, and that's just a computer called the server. And that server, as it sounds, it responds when it gets a request from the client computer. So the server is a central computer, and it's available to respond to a client request. That might be a request for a file or an application or print service, any of those type of things. With the server systems, you generally have better security, and there's simpler access and coordinated control. So the only, I guess, the problem there is that you, if the server goes down, everybody goes down. So you've got a single point of failure in that type of server network, client server network. The other downside, I guess, is that you need people who understand or can administer and maintain the server network. And you often need additional hardware and also additional software to operate. Talked a little bit earlier about protocols that we're going to talk about them. I think we touched on them last week. We're talking about them a little bit more this week. So they're basically the grunt of your network, or the motor of your network. They function of the OSI network model is carried out by protocols, and those protocols are active at each layer of the OSI network model. So they deliver a coordinated number of functions, and they are grouped into a protocol suite. TCP/IP represents, you know, or is one of those suite protocols. Anyone want to tell me some of the others that do know? Where's Elise gone? She knows these.
Okay, what did you want to know? Sorry, I missed the question.
That's okay. We're talking about one type of protocol being TCP/IP. I was asking if there were any others that people would like to mention.
Within TCP/IP, you've got IP, TCP.
No. General protocols like
any others,
IPX,
just general
SPX.
Protocols.
Oh, okay. General ones, yeah. Like NetBUI. Yep. I'll mention the two that I'll mention some that didn't meet. Good old NetBUI. IPX, SPX, Apple Talk, which is now redundant.
Yep. And yeah, we've got a couple of those now.
Oh yep. Gosh, there was one or two others.
Yep.
I'm not sure Apple about Token Ring, because there are subsets of Token Ring. It's not that simple, because Token Ring defines both the protocol and the media standard.
That's good, folks. So a protocol basically is a sequence of messages that gets exchanged between two or more systems to allow tasks to be accomplished. Okay, so we talk about TCP/IP, which has become the dominant standard for internetworking. And it represents a set of public standards that specifies how the packets of information get exchanged between computers over one or more networks. If we talk about application protocols, the ones I'm going to mention now function at the application layer of the OSI model. Anyone know some of them that might work at that layer of the OSI model?
The application layer?
Yep.
Some your email client, your web browser.
No, the protocols.
FTP.
SMTP. FTP is right, yeah, SMTP.
SMTP.
Is right. Yeah, SMTP, POP3.
Yep. We've got here, Telnet, yeah, it's another one. Yep. So I'll just go through a couple of those and what they are now. Telnet allows you terminal access to local or remote systems, and it's used to access remote devices and allows you to configure them or control them or troubleshoot them. The FTP, anyone tell me what FTP stands for?
File Transfer Protocol.
That's correct. And it gives you services for file transfer as it. That's correct, and manipulating them too. It uses also the session layer for and allows multiple simultaneous connections to your remote file systems. SMTP. Anyone tell me what that stands for? We're going well, so.
Simple Mail Transfer Protocol.
Simple Mail Transfer Protocol.
That's it. Yep. And
Simple
that gives
mail
you
protocol.
Excellent. Allows messaging services over TCP/IP, and it also supports most of your internet email programs. What about DNS? Tell me what that stands for.
That's just when Leone mics up because she's on the speakers brigade. When somebody's talking, it bounces back into channel. So we'll just disregard that. SMTP. I would say that most mail programs support SMTP because messaging programs do talk other protocols as well, but they do tend to support SMTP. But yes, DNS is the domain name system.
That's right. And it gives you access to the name servers, and that's where your network names get translated to the addresses, and they're used by Layer 3 network protocols. Okay, now the transport protocols. Okay, obviously as they sound, they function at the transport layer of the OSI model. So the TCP, anyone want to tell me what that stands for?
Transmission Control Protocol.
Transmission Control Protocol.
That's it. Excellent. And it's the primary internet protocol, allows for your delivery of data. What about UDP? Anyone know what that one stands for?
User Datagram Protocol.
User Datagram Protocol.
And that UDP offers a connectionless service to applications that don't want the overhead of TCP, and also that can actually tolerate a level of data loss. Okay, the internet protocols function at, anyone tell me, what layer of the OSI model?
Layer 3.
And you beat Chris to that one.
Yep, and layer 3 is the network layer, that's correct. Oh, if you don't know your layers by now, boy, you better learn them, because this is to everybody, you know. Yeah. Because you're going to get more and more and more on these layers.
So just as a very quick recap here, people, the layers of the OSI reference model. Layer 1 is the physical.
Let's get physical.
I was waiting for that. Layer 2.
Data link.
It's a data link. Layer 3 is...
network.
Yes, it is. Layer 4. We've got a local transport here, yes.
Transport.
Yep, that's right. Yep. Layer 5.
Session.
Layer 6. We've got a local answer presentation. And layer 7.
Presentation and application.
Everybody remember layer 7? Application. Please do not throw sausage pizza away.
And of course, we're all forgetting the 8th layer.
Ah, the Bogan layer, yes.
That's the one.
Which is a joke that refers to, as they say, the loose nut at the wheel or the user sitting in front of the computer that can render the entire protocol stack useless.
Okie dokie, alright.
Doing help desk would know that.
Alright, so now we're going to go through these protocols one by one. The IP, anyone tell me what that stands for?
Internet Protocol.
Yes, excellent. Easy one, that one, wasn't it? And it gives you source and destination addressing, and also with other routing protocols, it gives packet forwarding when you've got one network to another towards its destination. What about ICMP? What does that stand for?
We have to give him a little bit of time for that one, because it takes a while to type that in the chat.
Well done. Okay, that's good. Yes, Internet Control Message Protocol. See why they break them down, can't you? Okay, and it's used, that protocol's used for network testing and troubleshooting, and it gives you diagnostic and error messages. So it gives you echo messages and are used by the ping application to allow you to test remote devices. Ping! Anyone not know what ping is?
It's also used for fault reporting, as well as echo request and reply as well.
Okay.
Comcast used it to throttle BitTorrent.
Sorry, Aaron, what did you say?
I said Comcast uses it to throttle BitTorrent.
No, they don't. That just throttles DHT, but that's not a topic for this lecture. Because nowhere in BitTorrent's protocol specification, unless you're using DHT, does it use ICMP. It just uses TCP all the way.
Actually, they're using it by sending bogus resets to cancel connections, and that's how they're stopping people's BitTorrent from working effectively.
Ah. Yes, I was speaking to Mr. McMillan about that the other day. They're becoming, Comcast are becoming quite unpopular, especially given that some of the game developers actually use BitTorrent to distribute their updates for game patches and things.
Yeah, plus the FCC smacked them with a fairly hefty fine for doing it, so I don't think they'll be doing that anymore.
For those of you who don't know what BitTorrent is, it'll stay that way. But you can look it up on www.bittorrent.com. There are actually legitimate uses for BitTorrent, but we don't go into it any further.
Okay, RIP, R-I-P. Don't say rest in peace, please. Okay, can anyone tell me what that stands for?
Well, I think we've flummoxed everybody but Aaron.
It's the Routing Information Protocol, or RIP. It operates between your router devices, and it discovers the pathways between networks. If you've got internet work routers, and they depend on the routing protocol to build and information, and also to decide how to forward packets towards the destination. So that RIP will choose the route based on their distance or on their hop count. Little kangaroos jumping along. Okay.
And we cover that more in Discovery 2. In fact, a lot more in Discovery 2.
Okay, another. I'm just trying to keep you all awake here because this is heavy going, I know. OSPF. What does that stand for, please?
Open Shortest Path First.
Excellent. Well done. Okay, yes, it's Open Shortest Path First. And it enables your routers to build forwarding tables. Unlike RIP, though, it selects the routes based on the characteristics of the links between the networks, things such as bandwidth and delay. It's more suitable for a routing protocol in a large internet work.
Because RIP cannot handle routing paths by default with more than 16 hops. Which is a problem because often the internet is a lot longer than 16 hops away.
And last of these little quiz ones that I'm giving you is ARP. And that stands for?
Address Resolution Protocol.
And ARP actually highlights the local MAC address of the station on the network when its IP address is known. End stations actually, as well as routers, use ARP to discover the local addresses. All right. Proprietary and open standards. Proprietary technologies are owned by a company, and they're generally not compatible with equipment that's sold by other companies or other vendors. The networking standards get developed by a number of companies or organisations, and they're people that develop standards for networking technologies. The companies decide the standards, they've got big committees generally, and they agree on specifications for networking functions. So if you've got, say for example, open source software, it's generally free and you are not bound to copyright laws and those type of things, like you would be if you're using proprietary software. One of the leaders in the area of open source would be Linux. And now, with the different architectures, Ethernet is the another popular type of local area network that we use, and it's carried or based on the 802.3 standard. And that standard specifies that you have a network that implements carrier sense multiple access collision detection, or CSMACD, access control method. And it's used as a baseband transmission, and it's generally over coaxial or twisted pair cable, and that cable is actually laid in out in a bus topology as a linear or star bus. CSMACD means that you have multiple stations and they'll have access to the media, and before one station can access the media, it must first listen, which is carrier sense, to detect if another system is using the same media. If you had a scenario where another system is using the media, then that system needs to wait before it can actually transmit data. If you had both systems attempting to send data at the same time, you would have a collision as a result. We talk a lot about collisions and top of okay, these days we've got gigabit Ethernet, and it's capable of attaining speeds of up to 1 gigabit per second over fibre optic cable or other high speed type. 10BASE-T is a popular Ethernet implementation, and it uses a star bus topology. When we talk about Ethernet cable, we're talking about unshielded twisted pair or UTP cabling, and it's generally used for 10BASE-T. Shielded twisted pair is abbreviated down to STP, can also be used, and you can have 10BASE-T and 100BASE-X networks that are, and they're easily set up and easily expandable.
I was just going to point out that the reason it's a star bus topology, because that may have confused people, they're like, how can it be both? It's physically wired in a star, but it is considered logically as a bus. So you're talking about the physical and logical topology, star bus, physical being star, logical being bus.
Thank you for that.
What I'm going to cover now is something that you will get in your exams, particularly with regard to these what we're talking about at the moment, these implementations, advantages, disadvantages, that type of thing. One advantage of 10BASE-T is that it's inexpensive, and then, although you've got a hub, when it's connecting to more than two computer, the you can get small hubs that are available, and they don't cost a lot. Also, the network cards that work for 10BASE-T are inexpensive, so 10BASE-T requires the use of a hub, and if you're using connecting only two computers, for example, then UTP would be used rather than Thinet, which is a crossover cable, can also be used. With that type of cable, you've got wire pairs that are cross-connected, hence the word crossover cables. You can also use them to connect two hubs to each other if the hubs didn't have uplink ports on them. UTP is the most commonly used twisted pair cabling. Its advantages is it's thin, It's easy to work with, especially when you're looking at things like coaxial, which isn't flexible. It uses modular RJ45 plugs and jacks, and so it's easy to connect to the cable or to a network interface card or to a hub and such. Also, 10BASE-T is another advantage of it is it's easy to upgrade. When we're talking about 10BASE-T, by definition it runs at 10 megabits per second. And by using a Category 5 or similar or above, and dual-speed network interface cards, you can actually upgrade to 100 megabits per second if you replace the hubs. Disadvantages of 10BASE-T are that the maximum length for 10BASE-T segment without repeaters is only 100 metres or approximately 328 feet. Do remember these distances because they'll come up in your exam too. Okay, UTP is also, and this is a disadvantage I guess, is it's more susceptible to EMI or electromagnetic interference, and then you get attenuation, also attenuation. And as Kerry said, it's the decreasing of the signal as it gets further away from the source. The next evolution in was 100BASE-X, and we refer that to that also as Fast Ethernet. It's got a couple of variations that can be implemented over Category 5 UTP, that's 100BASE-T, over Category 5 UTP or STP, which is 100BASE-TX, or as Ethernet over two-strand fiber optic cable, which 100BASE-FX. So some of your advantages of 100BASE-X is that doesn't matter what implementation, it's 100BASE-X is high speed performance. So it's at 100 megabits per second, transfer rates would be 10 times that of 10BASE-T. It also uses twisted pair cabling, so it shares the same advantages that you would have in 10BASE-T, and that would be things like it's low cost, it's flexible, and it's easily expandable. Some of its disadvantages are that it shares those with 10BASE-T, and they're the disadvantages that you get with twisted pair cabling, and be things like attenuation and electromagnetic interference. When we refer to 1000BASE-T, we refer to that as gigabit Ethernet, and it supports, as it sounds, data transfer rates of 1 gigabit per second. And obviously that's a lot faster than T1. Okay. So the advantages of gigabit Ethernet are that its performance is going to be a lot faster. Disadvantages, it's common to all UTP networks, are the same as 10BASE-T and 100BASE-T. Are we all awake? Fortunately, this is not a long lecture today. We're getting through quite well. So, all right, now, when you have data that's being transmitted over all of the different media, is sent in half duplex or full duplex. So half duplex, as it sounds, allows for only one direction that can be used at a time when you're transmitting data over the lines. And that means that the data can only be sent and received at a separate time. So when you have half duplex transmission, the signals can only be transmitted one direction at a time, as opposed to full duplex, which allows you to have simultaneous direction of your data flow. Any questions up to this point, by the way?
Anyone still awake?
Oh, yeah, Trevor's awake.
I'm here.
Excellent. All right. Digital subscriber line, or DSL, was referred to as always-on technology, so it means you're not having to dial up each time you're wanting to get on the internet. And most of us, I hope, well, I know not everybody's using DSL, but most of us probably.
Chris would be using DSL if iNode hadn't lost his application.
Oh dear. there's a number of different varieties of DSL. You've got asymmetric DSL, or ADSL as we currently know it, and high rate data rate DSL, HDSL, symmetric, SDSL, VDSL, which is very high data rate, and ISDN, or IDSL, which is a generic term for DSL.
We actually have symmetric DSL here. We have two megabits symmetric, and we get 20 gig a month, just out of morbid curiosity. But at home we have ADSL, and can anybody tell me the difference between symmetric DSL and ADSL?
ADSL has a higher download speed than its upload speed.
I was actually going to accept the answer that they had differing upload and download speeds, but Aaron is correct. Why? Because people download more than they upload, generally speaking, unless they're torrent freaks like Chris and I. And generally speaking, there is a limit to what you can put over phone lines given their low bandwidth capabilities. So you can usually push more data in one direction than the other, and I believe it makes more sense to push more data down to the user than it does to allow users to push more data up, although I think also because you've got the connection digital to the local loop, it can make a difference as to how much data you can get down to the user as well. I think that's right anyway.
Yeah, it's because the last mile is still analog. There's a limitation, I forget exactly how it works, but it's the same limitation that means that 56k modems operate at 56k down and 33.6k up. And that's only solved when you get things like fibre to the home.
Yeah, I think it's because they can actually keep the signal digital all the way to the last mile, as Aaron puts it, and then the thing that's closest to your local loop is responsible for converting it, and it can do it in very... It is actually allowed to use more signal and more gain and stuff because it's owned by the telecommunications company, and it can get the signal to you rather than you doing that from your way, I believe. But we'd have to look into that.
Okay. ADSL also... has technology that it uses, and we refer to that as frequency division multiplexing, or FDM. And what that does is it splits the bandwidth in order to create multiple channels. With regard to some of the other DSL implementations, they use echo cancellation. Echo cancellation is efficient, but it's more expensive. And the ability to create multiple channels is the reason why we can be surfing the internet and using the telephone at the same time. Okay, with regard to cable modems, they act like a local area network interface. They connect the computer to the internet, and the cable modem service, which is similar to DSL, isn't always on technology. You can get internal and external cable modems, and if you're referring to the internal ones, most of them would be PCI cards, and the modem boxes then connect to an Ethernet card to the computer through UTP Ethernet. So I know this has been heavy going today. The things I guess you need to take out of this, and we're going to have a quiz in a moment. I know you love my quizzes. looking at things like the benefits of networking, benefits, pros, cons, differences between types of networks, the different topologies that you've got, you need to know those. Please make sure you know the OSI model, because you're going to get that, and also the different protocols that we use. So onward and upward, let's see how we go. Fingers at the ready. Little quiz before we all finish up. Okay, question one. What is plenum grade cable?
Oh, that's funny. You haven't even told them that.
I know. That's the first question.
Isn't it funny?
Let's see if anybody knows. Okay.
Well, I suppose what cables can be running through buildings, I suppose.
You've got to give the answers.
You can run it through walls and that sort of thing without...
Hang on!
We've done other studies, I think.
All right, question. What is plenum-grade cable? A, highest quality cable used in networking. B, cable with an outer jacket made of PVC that complies with fire codes. C, cable with an outer jacket made of Teflon that complies with fire code. D, inexpensive cable that can be used in outdoor spaces.
I'll have a go at C.
It is the outer jacket of Teflon. Well done, everybody.
The crevice is easier, eh?
Well, something like that. I think it's more the fact that, has anybody ever smelt PVC burning? It lets off noxious fumes. And in fact, that's one of the things that often kills people in house fires, is not the fire itself, although that will do that eventually, but it's the fumes from all of their placky stuff catching fire and burning horribly. And that's why they say get down low and go, go, go. That's apparently what we were told, so that you can get away from those sorts of things. But yes, that is plenum-based cabling, and it does need to be easy to pull through crevices, as Elise points out as well.
And the other thing is, if you don't get down low and get out of there, you'll go down, 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 in a ring topology, in a ring topology.
Oh, dear.
She's bad. Who's bad?
Oh, no. There's something strange in the network class.
Oh, it's lecturing on this stuff. It just sends you a bit mental after a while.
I think it says night cold and flus, personally.
I think so. Oh, yes, everybody. I took some tablets this morning because I've had a cold. And I think I took a night one. They were night and days. So for a little while there, I was not too good. Fighting sleep. Okay. Go on. Oh.
All right, 1, 2, 3, Now, can we get the violins out now?
Yeah, please. Okay, question 2. What is a major advantage...
Don't
okay, who said that?
It was Mrs. Murray.
Mrs. Murray, can I, please? Okay, what is a major advantage, thank you, of ring topology? A, there are no collisions. B, there is more bandwidth. C, it is easy to add another node to the network without interruption. Or D, wire access is not shared.
C.
Interesting. Oh, dear. Interesting. Oh, yes. Okay, you're all wrong.
They are all wrong.
Oh, somebody's right. Who said A? Who said A? Oh, Mr. Leg. Okay. The correct answer was there are no collisions. Think of a ring going round and round and round in circles. No collisions. Okay. Okay, question 3. Which of the following cannot be assigned by a DHCP server? Is it A, an IP address? B, a subnet mask. C, a default gateway. D, a DNS server. Or E, a MAC address.
E.
Ah, well done, everybody. Yes, it was the MAC address. Okay, all right. Which operating system will enable a computer to assign an IP address to itself if it cannot contact a DHCP server? Is it A, ARP? B, RAP? C, a PIPA? Or D, DNS?
C.
Yes, it's a standard that Microsoft uses to assign IP addresses in the absence of a DHCP server, and we have successfully connected a few laptops up through a switch and used a PIPA to share files between them because I have no life, but it does work.
And my dog's still snoring.
Does anybody know how you tell whether you have been assigned an APIPA address? Just very briefly, before we get on to the next question.
Your IP address comes up as 169-something.
169.254. The other dead giveaway is where it says some auto-configuration is enabled, and then it says auto-configuration address : in your IP config output, which I hope all students will have run at least once in their lifetime from the command prompt.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Which of the following is best described a default gateway? Is it A, it is the address of the near side interface on a router? B, it is the address of the last port on a switch? C, it is the address of the last interface on a bridge? Or D, it is the address of the near side interface on a hub?
Hey.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Alright, here's one that'll test the CCNA people. Which of the following is an invalid IP address? Is it A, 24.88.12.9? Is it B, 204.88.198.7? Or C, 192.23.11.258?
C.
Yeah, and you're all okay. That's good, folks. Very, very good. Okay. So, that brings us to the end of today's lecture.
Any questions?
Yeah.
Before we all toddle off, anybody got any questions? Anybody got any questions that are the general workings of ITE or the general workings of CCNA or Discovery? And do I point out to you all at this point that at the end of ITE 2 you all have to do a practical exam, which involves setting up all sorts of funky things on Linux servers?
Yes, you do have a practical exam. Yeah. Anyone got any questions at all? Yes,
you can.
Go for it.
I've always got questions.
Well, is the best medicine.
Yeah, laughter is the best medicine. So go ahead, Elise.
That's all right. I'm glad that everyone thinks laughter is the best medicine, because I do too. I was just looking at the Netiquette website whilst this lecture was underway, and I looked at the fact that I've been enrolled successfully into IT2. Are we going to be doing module exams similar to that of IT1? And if so, when are we likely to expect to start seeing them and expecting to do them?
You should be able to access them pretty much now.
If you have been enrolled...
I went to take assessment and said, you currently do not have any assessments to take.
Oh, well, you will once Geraldine belts the button.
That's because I haven't activated them.
So you have to hit the button, Geraldine. So
yeah, I have to hit the button. Okay, which ones do you want?
Oh, I don't know. One, I suppose, is a good step.
Just activate the lot.
Is the loneliest number that there'll ever be. Yeah, okay, I'll do the lot.
Fun. Yep. I guess we're almost ready to do two. I haven't done the worksheets for two, but we've done the lecture. Are we finished two yet or not?
We finished two. Yep, all done.
Although I must stress... Yeah, go ahead, Les. I'll finish stressing once you've finished.
I pretty much read through the class notes last night and had them on the side here, but I just sat here and listened to the lecture.
Yeah, it is very important with underlines and stuff that when you get to doing the labs and stuff on this particular course that you mess around with the labs and stuff and really get your hands dirty. Otherwise you won't pass the practical, because I'll expect you to have done all sorts of things by the time you get to the practical. The other thing we'll also mention is that as soon as you get your virtual machines, it's very important that you get your virtual machines up and running and functional, and that you are comfortable with their use, because you will be utilising the virtual machines for the practical exam. And I can't get my virtual machines going, will not exempt you from the practical. We'll sort something else out. So very important that people get into that and raise any queries they do have with that process. And also keep an eye on Cavi Announce, because various little nuggets of information will be appearing there as the weeks go on to help you solve various problems as you travel along through ITE 2 and Discovery 2 and the bridging modules of Discovery 1.
And it's really good to see everybody using the list. So it's been quite well used lately, so that's good, guys. That's what they're for.
Yeah, and we definitely encourage a student, if they have a problem, to post a Cavi Discuss. Often the instructors can answer your question, but often your answer will be of use to other students as well. So if you have a course-related question, you can post that to Cavi Discuss, and perhaps one of the fellow students, helpers, or the instructors will answer your question or point you in the right direction.
And just a bit of indulgence here, although I'd set my virtual machines up, I still found Kerry's, I think there's about four files in his tutorials there that he's got there on QCAT, rather interesting and useful to listen to.
Ah, that's a comparison. I found them rather boring and dreary when I listened to them the other day, but they are informative, however.
They are informative, they are good, and they will teach you the odd shortcut and stuff, keyboard shortcut and stuff I didn't know.
Ah, such as Control-G to grab.
That was the one I actually knew, but yes, there are some other cool ones.
Absolutely.
How works.
Okay, any other questions before we stop recording?
It doesn't sound like it, so without further ado then, we'll sign off. We will be available on Skype from about, I don't know, we'll be on there for a little while and then we'll...